It's Friday, December 5th, 2014, and you've tuned in to We the People, Constitution Matters, right here on 1180 AM WFYL. My name is Bruce Stocking, and I'm joined by Corinne Lillis. Gary Porter will be with us. He's the Executive Director of the Constitution Leadership Initiative. Sam Rohr, the President of the Pennsylvania Pastors Network and the American Pastors Network. And Charles Proctor, the Law Office of Proctor and Lindsay. And today's topic's going to be a continuation of what we did before the Thanksgiving break, which is teaching and educating the public on the Constitution, how to do that. It's a very, very tough thing to do because so many people nowadays are looking at the Constitution of, oh, it's just some old document. And how to get them to relate to that document, how to make it exciting for them, how to get them to understand that that document, that law of the land is for their benefit. And just because something is old, the Constitution of the United States being an old document, but there is no time limit on quality. Quality does not run out. If something of good quality, it will last forever and ever, as long as it's maintained, as long as it's cherished and taken care of, it will last and understood. And that is going to be the focus of our discussion today, which will deal with educating on that document, the different ways of going about to do that, how to get people to relate to the document itself, the importance of it. So often the Constitution is being taught in a very dry type of stilted manner, and which it'll turn you off faster than a light switch. But how to get it to be interactive and get people involved. So today's voyage will deal with that. And leading the voyage, of course, will be Gary Porter, who's on the phone with us right now. Welcome back, Gary, after the long break.
It's good to be back. It was a wonderful Thanksgiving weekend, but we had a great time, and I'm back ready to hit the ground running, so to speak.
That's it. And also, I want to welcome to the program Sam Rohr. Sam, welcome back to the program.
Gary, great to be back as well.
And Chuck Proctor.
Good morning, Bruce. As usual, it's good to be here, and I've been listening to you all week, so I know that you're on point today, I'm sure.
Oh, well, I'm hoping you guys will keep me there. So, well, that's Corinne's job to do that as well. And yeah. Good morning, Corinne.
Good morning, Bruce.
So,
Bruce, where are you headed this weekend? Why don't you tell our listeners where you're headed for, what is it, 30-something years running?
Oh, well, yeah, I'm going to be heading out to Old Bedford Village out in western part of Pennsylvania. We do a program out there at the reconstructed village of Christmas of the 1820s, and I'm going to be setting up a dry and fancy goods store. And you know, even with Christmas, you talk the Constitution, because running a store of the time, you have to talk commerce. And so I always tend to weasel that one in there when I'm out there teaching history. But speaking about teaching history, the Constitution itself is the history that we're talking about. And with the Constitution, you got to keep one thing in mind with history and also with the Constitution. Gary, I looked at your essay that you wrote here, and you had a one line in there about how you're constantly learning as well, and I like to start things off by saying, isn't it true that with the Constitution and with history, you're going to learn something old every day?
Well, absolutely. There are a number of books, obviously, on that founding period and on the formation of the Constitution itself, and each one that I get sheds new light on that topic, and it's just an exciting adventure to open up a new book wondering what new insights it's going to contain. And I'm glad you mentioned that the Constitution, studying the Constitution, can be potentially very dry. In fact, I took a constitutional law course at a local junior college, and there was no excitement at all in studying Supreme Court decisions, reading Supreme Court decisions about the Constitution. But when you put the Constitution in its proper context, when you go back and study the period of time in which these men were working in Philadelphia, why they were there, what the defects were in the Articles of Confederation that they were desperate to fix, how those defects in the Articles of Confederation got there in the first place, which leads you back to July of 1776 and the Declaration of Independence and the drafting of the Articles of Confederation. And when you start studying the men who were involved in this process, what they felt, what they thought, what their ideas of law and government were, the whole topic becomes alive and vibrant, and that's the way to study it.
Yeah.
That's the way to make it interesting, is to bring it alive by taking to heart author Gary Will's wonderful little encapsulation when he said that to study any document remote from us in time, you must first assemble a world around that document. So that's what my courses attempt to do, is assemble a world around the Constitution so that it becomes, I hesitate to use the word living document because that has some negative connotations, but
yeah.
The Constitution really needs to be looked at in the sense that it was alive in 1787 as these men were putting it together.
Well, perhaps we look at the avenue with the quote-unquote living document to the fact that the document is a document. It's really an inanimate object, but it's the living people, the American people, that bring the life to it by understanding it and preserving it. How's that for an angle on that phrase?
Well, that's great. And but the people of America need to understand that all the trouble we're in is not going to fix itself until the American people understand the root cause of those problems.
Mm-hmm.
And they need to understand that they have to understand their Constitution and how it has been perverted so that they can hold their elected officials accountable to an originalist perspective on that document. Well, they don't understand what that perspective is or should be right now, so we need to teach them. And we somehow need to get their attention and pique their interest to come out and take a course on the Constitution.
Yeah, and, you know, the fact that it is a legal document, and, you know, it is on its face, if you just sit down and read it, it's nothing that's going to keep you awake because it does get kind of dry in that. And I think that's the way we've got to look at it. And speaking of legal things that look at on a regular basis that could probably bore you to tears, Chuck, you do this on a regular basis here as an attorney. How do you get it to be interactive and, you know, in the legal sense? Because let's face it, I've looked at a lot of legal things. We've all looked at it. It's a lot of mumbo jumbo, and it's like, I can think of something better to do.
Well, I personally have to agree with you that, and what Gary said, that reading Supreme Court cases does not come at the top of my list either. However, irrespective of the grammar that they use or the literary style that they use in writing, the wisdom that's contained in Supreme Court decisions quite often is very insightful into what our founding fathers did. And granted, there are some cases that are stinkers out there. But Bruce, did you know that from 1810 to 1957, the Supreme Court had only reversed itself 90 times?
Really?
That's right. And I don't have the statistics from 57 on, but
it's interesting to see
in
the recent times how much it's happened.
Not much different. But
yeah.
One of the things on this whole education thing, I was at a political function this week with elected officials, state and local, and the conversation turned to education. And it wasn't about funding education. It wasn't about Common Core. It was about the lack of knowledge, the lack of information, which Gary has stressed repeatedly, that the average adult voter does not have about our system of government, about the Constitution, about the Declaration of Independence, about our founding fathers, and how this is really one of the key problems. So they can throw all the money they want at it. It's not going to change until the curriculum, the standards have turned around. And I heard just this week that there are seven out of 50 that have proposed legislation pending, waiting to be signed, waiting to get through their respective legislatures, that would require high school students to answer a minimum of 10 or 12 questions regarding the Constitution.
Yeah, I saw that.
And to me, that would be a start, but it needs to be a whole lot more than just answering 10 questions on civics, because the comparison was made to, if you come in here as a legal immigrant and you want to be a naturalized citizen, you have to take a test. And that test, from what I understand, I've never seen it, but I understand, and Gary, you may have seen it, is rather substantial regarding your knowledge of our form of government.
Well, you know,
I think it's 100 questions.
Go ahead, Gary.
I think it's 100 questions that they have to take, or at least a 50-question selection of a 100-question bank.
Yeah, but, you know, you get to the point with this where, as we used to say, you know, he's got smarts in book learning, but he doesn't have it in reality. You can answer a question, but really, do you understand the question is what it comes down to. And since you mentioned with legislators, now let me get Sam in here. You kind of dealt with that in the State House. You got a lot of folks there that don't really pay attention to the Constitution, let alone the federal and the state Constitution. To educate there, maybe some thoughts from you on this.
Well, Bruce, thoughts on that is that, I think I've shared in here once before. It was about 10 years ago when you were in the House. We were debating something on the floor, and one of the members asked of the whole body, how many of you have read the Constitution? And about 10 hands went up. And that's true. And I thought, well, that's pretty good. At least they told the truth in that matter, because they did because they hadn't. So what you have is you have people who, like in this case, have taken the oath to enforce it, who haven't read it, which means that their oath means nothing because there's no possible way they can defend it if they don't know what it is. So you've got to me, I'm going to drive it back to the basis of truth and morality that kind of sits underneath of this whole thing, because as I look at the Constitution, I look and say, well, what's there and what's teachable about it? Well, it's not the words per se. It's that the truths that they embody that really make that document, if you went internal, I never used to say the living document word either, because it's not true in the way that liberals say it.
It sounds dumb also.
But the truths that are within it are never changing, because they are truth. And so to that extent, it is very much vibrant, alive, applicable to today, because the truths that are in it are true for every generation and any time in the history of the world. But I have found that, and I don't know, as we go forward on that, mm-hmm. from the standpoint of legislature or anyone else about learning it, when you fully know they don't know, is that there are times, and we could probably talk about some of this, there are teachable moments. You know, we have children. We've all used the word teachable moments. There are times when, you know, I just used the example of the day. I've talked to our children earlier and said, we do not lie in this household. We do not lie. Why? Because God says do not lie. And that's one of the Ten Commandments, you know, that's in there as well. Well, it's a factor of our law, too. If you lie of the stand, it's a matter of a violation of civil law. That's where it comes from. But, you know, it's one thing to say thou shalt not lie. And it's another thing to say, wait a minute, Johnny, do you see what you just did right there? You deceived your brother. You didn't tell the whole truth. You only told a part of it. That is called deception. That is the same thing as a lie. Oh, is that what that is? You know, a teachable moment. Now he understands the principle. Now you can kind of begin to understand that. But there are many times, and we have many examples, you know, the president with executive order on Constitution. There are times that we have been given that we need to bear down and say these are teachable moments where we underpin not just what happened, but the violation of the principle underneath mm-hmm. that's really taking place. That, at a time when people are generally ignorant, may sometimes, I think, be oftentimes the best way to make it click and say, you know what? Now I get it. Now I get it. Yeah. But that's just a few thoughts.
Yeah. Gary, you know, what Sam was saying with the teachable moment on there, and you teach it. What do you find that works? In fact, I saw the one comment that you wrote down about an individual who attended the 3-hour talk that you did on the Constitution there. He says, I learned a lot, but most of all, I learned that I need to learn more.
Right, and that goes to the heart of one of the problems in getting people interested in a course on the Constitution, because it is a time investment, and we're all busy, we all have things to do and places to go, people to see, and hobbies of our own, and asking people to commit 20 hours to take a Constitution course is a big request, and it's a big investment of time. So I'm starting to look at other ways of presenting the material, or at least showing them how fun it can be to learn about the Constitution. So I was recently, during Thanksgiving week, I was out in Tennessee visiting friends, and I kind of invited myself to a Tea Party meeting that was run by a former Air Force friend. And I gave them a real short synopsis of my 20-hour course, distilled down into, well, I'd hoped to have targeted it 2.5 hours, and it actually went 3.5 hours. And that's where that comment came from. We covered a lot of ground in 3.5 hours, but at least it showed some that it can be an enjoyable enterprise in learning about the Constitution. So now I'm in the midst of taking my 20-hour course and distilling it down into a single 8-hour day experience in hopes of finding people who, if they can't commit to 20 hours, can at least give me 8 hours of their time on a Saturday to learn about the Constitution.
Yeah.
The same, if David Whitney were joining us today, I think he'd say that that's the same approach the Institute on the Constitution has taken. Their course is normally about 12 hours long, 12 lectures of 1 hour each, and they have distilled it down also into a single day experience.
Yeah,
Gary, could you tell our listeners, I know a couple of weeks ago you mentioned the games, I think it was a game that you mentioned that people could play.
Absolutely.
With their kids, because I think that's just a really great way to incorporate
right.
the Constitution.
Now, I have not bought this game myself, but a friend of mine has, and he likes it. He says it was a great investment. It's a game called Constitution Quest, and if you Google that, you'll find there is a website that'll show you all, you know, how to buy it, where to buy it. I bring it up right now on my computer, and I think the current price is $60, but it's a Monopoly sort of board game where your token goes around the board and you answer questions about the Constitution in a fun, competitive way, and it's geared for all ages, so it can be a family enterprise where parents and kids can play together, and everybody can learn more about their Constitution this way.
Well, Gary, you know, you just hit on something that just came into my mind when you're talking about that, is you go to some of these restaurants and you go to some of these bars, they've got these little trivia question cards that you can play with your friends while you're there. Boy, wouldn't that be a thing to have those out there on the Constitution?
Well, those trivia cards do exist. I've seen them. But wouldn't it be great if you could walk into a restaurant and find those sitting on your table? Also, that's a great angle. I need to start approaching restaurant owners to see if they're willing to do that, because I know the cards exist.
Oh, yeah, because people will pick them up and immediately start going. Now, with teaching, and again, we're going to go back to the boring subject of teaching something that could be potentially looking on the outside boring. Chuck, you teach over at Widener, and what techniques do you use? And for the age bracket of we're all about the same except for Corinne here. We're all in the same age bracket. These young folks that come in there. What do you use to connect with them?
Well, Bruce, first of all, I have to make it relevant to today's society, today's news, today's activities. And with young people, I try to find something that they can relate to and use a current event, anything. It doesn't have to be a particularly political or governmentally related news item, but I can pick an item out of what's going on and get the kids talking about it and then relate it to all types of things, whether it's the Constitution, whether it's the Bible, and make the connection that way. I don't start out with the Constitution. I don't start out reading them the First Amendment. Now, I'll give you an example. Somebody was talking in class. So we were having a discussion about free speech, and they're saying, oh, you shouldn't be saying that, and you shouldn't be saying this. And I let them continue with the discussion. And then we got right into separation of church and state. Mm-hmm. And they brought it up, and I was able to go, well, who can show me in the Constitution where that exists? And none of them, they're all like, well, they blank look on their face. So I got out my copy of the Constitution, which you know I always carry with me, and I read the First Amendment to them.
Yeah.
And they were like, wow, we didn't know that. They just assumed that it was there. But it started by letting them talk about some current event. It could, and movies, music, Dancing with the Stars, as you know, how much I like that.
But it gets in every night, doesn't it?
Yeah, every night. But it gets the conversation started. The other thing I wanted to point out, and Gary alluded to it earlier, I don't think there's one time that I've been on this show that I haven't come away without learning several things, not just one thing, but several things, whether it might be a little fact or maybe just a concept. And I take the same approach in the classroom, because I've had students say things in class that have helped me understand what I'm teaching better. So it's a constant, and I think Gary's point about this constant learning, this constant reinforcement of the concepts that we learned. I started learning this, my copy of the Constitution here is from my ninth grade civics class. Mm-hmm. It's out of print. I can't even get it anymore, but I still carry it around. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean I don't read it every day. I'm not looking at it all the time, just like my Bible. My Bible, my Constitution.
Yeah, well, you know, we're going to have to take a break in just a minute and that, but I want to bring something up, just kind of throw this and let you think about this during the break that we have.
Yeah, and people can call in. Our number is 610-539-TALK, so if you want to call in for the second hour.
Is that I like doing a lot of teaching through living history, and quite literally, folks, we sit around here, Gary's on the phone, Chuck and Sam and Corinne and I are in studio and that. And we discuss these issues. Is this not a little bit of a living history of what those founding fathers did when they created the Articles of Confederation and the Constitution? So what you're saying about you learn and you pick up something on every one of these programs, if we look at it in that little living, we're having our own little history here in teaching, and hopefully we're sharing that with the folks that are tuning in and listening as well. But we are going to take a break. We're going to catch up on some news stories. And on the other side of the news, we're going to come back and continue our voyage into the Constitution and how to educate people to that. So stay with us. You're listening to We the People, Constitution Matters, right here at 1180 AM WFYL. We the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America.
Welcome back. You're listening to We the People, Constitution Matters. I want to remind anyone who wants to call in to this program, we're here until 8 a.m. You can call 610-539-TALK. We're talking all things Constitution. And yes, it is interesting, I promise.
Now, Corinne, what happens if somebody isn't up early enough to listen to us and they miss the show?
Bruce, that is a great question. I'm so glad you asked. They can go on over to 1180WFYL.com, check out our podcast page. All previous shows that we've had for this program are up there, so take a listen at your convenience. And you can also email us, info@1180WFYL.com.
All right. Well, before the break, and what this program is consistent of, we're talking about educating people to the Constitution, how to go about that, how to get them to relate to that. And Gary Porter has talked to us about talking to people at Tea Party groups and other individuals and that educating that, and Chuck Proctor has talked about law students that are coming in, teaching them. But I want to go to you, Sam.
And another segment, an important segment of the population with the public are, of course, the pastors. And a lot of pastors, we've talked about this in past programs, don't realize and have been literally bamboozled by things like IRS and so forth as far as what they can and cannot say. Getting the message and teaching them of the Constitution.
Bruce, I think you're totally correct. You know, I was thinking as we've been talking about this, you know, when you consider the Constitution, we are talking about it because we appreciate the Constitution, because we know what it embodies. We know the impacts when we follow it, and we know the problems when we ignore it. But we have an appreciation for it. What happens if people don't have an appreciation for something? They really have little interest in it. And it's very tough to educate someone on something of which they see no value. As I've traveled around in this country and then around the world, even with working in some of these other countries now, I find that there's two groups of people that most appreciate the Constitution. One, it's those who understand biblical truth, have an understanding of God and moral law. If they understand those things, then they appreciate the Constitution because it's a reflection of taking that moral truth that has now been moved over into civil law truth. But the other is our peoples around the world who have never had freedom and who look here to the United States as a place that they want. That's what's happening in Ukraine, as we're teaching biblical principles to government leaders in Ukraine. Yesterday, we had a conference call with some pastoral leaders in the nation of Kenya who are inviting the same thing. Now, same things in all cases. They look to the United States, this shining city on a hill, as Penn called it, this holy experiment. He said, because the nations of the world want a precedent. I mean, it's the history of the world longing for freedom, have never had it, look to what we have and say, what is it about the United States? We want what they have. Well, it is biblical truth that has been embodied within a civil document called the Constitution. So from my perspective, that where the appreciation most fundamentally starts is in the moral application part of it, and it is the preaching of the pulpit. And you are correct. There are many pastors who do not even touch on anything that we would term civil government related because a lot of reasons which we've touched on before. But it's not possible to properly teach the Scripture in the Bible, biblical truths, without connecting it to the principles that underlie it that are embodied within the Constitution. For instance, the separation of church, the separation of powers, as an example. It's a fundamental thread that runs in our Constitution. We say, well, what big deal? Well, what's that? Why was it there? Well, it was there because the founders understood the depravity of man, which is a biblical principle, and that men don't naturally do that as well, and men naturally try to gravitate and pull power together, and men naturally try to enslave other human beings. They do not think biblically, and so you have to put checks in the system that keep them from doing that. The Constitution really is one something that put checks in the system as well. But that's a biblical truth. But if we understand that, and I'm looking here at 10 truths pulled out from that William Penn laid down here in Pennsylvania, understand the nature and role of God, the nature of man, the purpose of government, the purpose of law, the concept of justice, all of those things he covered. But those are the elements that found their way into the Constitution, Bruce, but those were biblical first. So if you deny the biblical, it becomes more of an academic document, and as an academic document, it can become dry. But as a moral document, it is applicable to every aspect of life, and for me, that is one of our greatest emphasis is the pastors in the pulpit standing up and saying, this is what God says, this is why it is, and because of this truth, this is why we need to have a controlling document like the Constitution. And at that point, then all of those points say, well, now I understand why they said in their all the things that are listed in the original Bill of Rights and in the Declaration of Independence. But that's where I start for that reason. Mm-hmm. To me, that's the most live aspect, and it raises for me personally, my greatest admiration and respect for the Constitution comes from the knowledge of those truths and knowing that they're embodied in that document.
And Sam, you just said something that got me thinking. as you take a look in this country, and David Whitney has pointed it out as well, is that we have not an attack on a religion, but we have an attack on God taking place in this country. And, you know, the fact that you've got people denying the biblical truth, therefore go hand in hand, they want to make our Constitution irrelevant because they do kind of go hand. So you deny one, the other one goes with it. Yeah, you get the same feeling on that?
I think very clearly. We just did a press release the other day, 2 days ago, on backing out of the whole Ferguson matter.
Yes.
And all that, and tying that together and say, here it is. What it is, folks, is lawlessness masquerading as justice. But this whole together, all this together, is a direct attack on the experiment of self-government. At the end of the day, man's heart is lawless. Man wants to be unconstrained. And if we don't constrain ourselves, as Penn said, according to the Ten Commandments of God, we will be unrestrained, unlawful, and become tyrannical. And that was the whole basis for it, what they put together here. So as we're watching things out here right now, we're watching a manifestation, whether it's the president saying, I'm going to disregard the Constitution, go around it, go around whatever that may be, or the regulatory branch trying to make law, or any of those kind of things that we're seeing, witnessing out there. It's really a manifestation of the heart that is lawless, that says, I don't want to be controlled either by God, moral law, or by the Constitution, civil law. I am a law unto myself. And when you jettison those two, you have tyranny, and that's really what we're seeing the outworking of. We're seeing a move towards tyranny because we're rejecting moral law, God's law, which is the underpinning for highest civil law, the Constitution. But you separate those two, you have no basis to go forward.
Exactly. Well, you know, in fact, talk about a teachable moment. What you just mentioned with tyranny, whenever we talk the Constitution or the history of this country, tyranny, the word tyranny comes up all the time. And Gary, quite literally, people think that that word tyranny is just a word, an old word of the past and so forth. But as Sam was pointing out there, we're actually seeing what tyranny is. Do you agree?
Oh, absolutely. Ask some people out west who have had the EPA tell them that they can't build a pond on their land that they own. Look at the coal industry trying to be shut down by our government. There are examples of tyranny all over the place right now. It's not perhaps the same color of tyranny that they experienced in 1776, but it is tyranny nevertheless.
I have something I want to bring up. We brought this up this week on It's a New Day, and I'm just curious what our contributors here have to say about it. I know earlier this week, Ben Watson, he's a tight end for the Saints, was on CNN, and he had wrote this big article about Ferguson on Facebook. So CNN, and he talked about his faith in the article on Facebook. So clearly CNN knew prior to that, you know, he was going to bring this up on the air. If they're interviewing him, like, that's what the main purpose of his article was. So they brought him on the air, and then he starts talking about how people need the gospel and they need to learn about Jesus, and that's what will actually solve this problem and all these protests. And they literally pulled the feed on him, and the screen went gray and green and all fuzzy. And the woman, it was a split screen, so he's pulled on the right side, and the woman interviewing him on the left was like, oh, we're so sorry, we just suddenly lost him.
Yeah.
And,
right.
You know, me having some background in TV, I was like, okay, first of all, that's not what would happen if you lose someone. You literally have to pull the feed. So I'm just curious, because isn't that a violation of his First Amendment rights? I mean, would that be true?
Probably not, because they invited him to come on the show. It was their idea. There's no First Amendment right to go on a radio show or a TV show and state your opinion, but they certainly can invite you to come on.
Well, then you get to the point of professionalism and civility versus just simply crudeness.
It certainly wasn't ethical.
No, there you go.
If it was intentional, it was certainly not ethical.
Yeah. Well, Corinne, let me ask you a question on this one. Now, we've been doing this program for a number of months now, and you've been listening to us constitutional old guys get together and talk about this thing. And coming into things, what have you gotten out of learning about the Constitution? How have you began the journey into the Constitution. What caught your interest on that? Because the reason I'm asking you is one thing that I've discovered, and a gentleman I think you probably as well, is that when folks get into their 50s, then they start getting interested. It's almost like genealogy. You don't get interested in your genealogy until you get about 50 years old. But the young folks, and that's really the target audience that we want to get to understand and learn this document. And Corinne is definitely filling that. So what has hooked you?
Well, I think, and Chuck has brought this up before, and I think he's exactly right, that if you tie it into current events that are going on, it really sparks an interest. Because if you, you know, talk, not everyone has a super big passion for history. Some people do, some people don't, and that's fine. But I think if you tie it into current events and how it's directly affecting you, I think that's kind of what's pulled me in. Because I think people have this idea that they're in, you know, I've said this before, they're in their bubble and they don't think it's going to impact them in any way. But I think when they, when you can clearly understand that it does affect you, it affects your future, I think that's when it starts to, at least that woke me up. So I think tying it into current events is probably the best approach, at least for me. So understanding that it's not something that you can kind of just keep pushing away and thinking that it will just go away and you won't ever have to deal with it, because there's a lot more consequences that way than when you just address it.
Right. Gary, with your teachings, do you find that it's an older crowd that's now becoming interested, or are you starting to get folks of the younger crowd getting interested?
Well, mostly older folks, but therein lies the challenge. How do you reach out and even inform the younger generation that there is a course available? I'm coming to the opinion that I need to hire a public relations manager who knows how to reach out to that younger audience.
I think there's one that wrote something about the president's daughter that's available right now.
Oh, yeah, there you go. But listen to this in terms of why. I'm always struck by the insight of John Jay, who was our first Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, and, of course, one of the three writers of the Federalist Papers. In 1777, he was giving a speech or a charge to a grand jury that had just been convened in Ulster County, Pennsylvania. And he said, every member of the state ought diligently to read and study the Constitution and teach the rising generation to be free. By knowing their rights, they will sooner perceive when they're being violated and be the better prepared to defend and assert them. And so the younger generation, the rising generation, absolutely has to have this knowledge. If they don't understand the source of their rights and the character of their rights, they will not know how to defend those rights. I'm surprised that many people, when I ask them in my classes, you know, I say, when a policeman stops you on a traffic stop and asks to search your vehicle, does he have the right to do that without a search warrant? And a lot of people think yes, if the policeman says so, I have to yield to that request. So they don't understand some of the basic rights that the Constitution guarantees them. And if they don't understand those rights, how can they assert them?
Yeah. And I'm curious, is there, because I think something that would help younger people too is if they actually understood what it would be like to live without those rights. Like you mentioned, Sam, people who come over who didn't have those rights really appreciate it. So I don't know if there would be some sort of way for people to go through a sort of a mini experience, like a test almost, like a, I don't know if it could be a game or a little course. Like, this is what life would be like if you didn't have your rights.
Well,
and then you would see, oh, okay, this is not what I want. Maybe I should start looking into this and caring.
Well, maybe we'll throw this one to Chuck on that, because Chuck teaches young folks in law. The mere fact that you ever mentioned to him that you wouldn't be here learning this if it wasn't for the Constitution?
Bruce, that's a constant theme that I talk about in class and outside of class. Yesterday, after we had a final exam, and several of the students were just hanging around chatting, you know, at the end of the semester type of thing. And we talk about what if you didn't have free speech? What if your religious conscience was burdened? What if you couldn't go to the church or the synagogue that you chose? Those types of things come up all the time, and they haven't thought about it. And I'm going to throw the question a little bit back to Corinne, because what I see is the kids are distracted. They're distracted by, and I use my famous thing, Dancing with the Stars, whatever TV show it is or what have you. They're distracted. They're distracted by the football game. They're distracted by what party they're going to. They're distracted by the latest in their circle of friends. And as we've all seen on Fox News, Jesse Waters does his Waters World thing, and they were some students at a local university in Texas, I believe, started copying that, and they went around to their friends and they asked them, "Well, who's the head of the Department of State, or who's head of the Department of Justice?" This type of thing, and they couldn't answer the question. They didn't even know what those departments were. But they asked them who was the star of Jersey Shore, and they could all answer with Snooki. Yeah, they all answered that question. So I think that there's a distraction there, and I don't mean to sound conspiratorial, but it's almost an intentional thing. Keep the people distracted with Dancing with the Stars or Snooki or whatever it is, and don't let them focus in on what's going on in the government or in our
perhaps Dancing with the Stars and Snooki there are giving us an indication of how to go about the teach this document, because examining not so much their content in that, but examining what is it that that appeals to people to watch this stuff and to go that route.
Yeah, and I'm curious, what if there was some sort, because you have to do all these tests in high school to place certain things in order to graduate, and I feel like a lot of times they're just teaching you to pass tests. But what if there was something that you have to pass, you have to get at least a certain score on the Constitution, or else you can't graduate? Because in a way, I mean, you're not going to be prepared for the real world and all that.
The fact is, in a lot of the schools, Corinne, you've got to get it back into the school curriculum to teach it, because they've gotten away from that.
Yeah.
And, you know,
hey, Bruce?
Yes, sir.
Let me lay down a challenge. Do you think there are 20 to 25 listeners of WFYL that are willing to give up a Saturday, just one Saturday, 8 hours, 3 a.m, 5 p.m, out by home by dinner time, in order to study the Constitution? If there are, I will debut my 8-hour version of my Constitution course there in your area at the earliest convenience.
Well, I can think of one fellow, a good friend of mine, Bill Steinsack, that probably would say
yeah,
absolutely.
He would.
But that's a good challenge out there.
Well, let's ask your listeners to call into the studio and sign up for a course soon, probably early January. It'll be on a Saturday. It'll start at 9 o'clock in the morning. It'll finish by 5 o'clock in the afternoon. It'll be a condensed version of the Constitution course. And I'll drive up there from Yorktown and put that on. In fact, we'll plan it so I can do the Friday morning show in the studio.
Whoa.
And then Saturday.
Wow.
And then Saturday we'll give the course.
Now come on, Gary. You said to me a while back, boy, you're just looking for an opportunity to come up and be in studio, and I think you found it.
I just found it.
Yeah, you did.
If listeners are interested, they could email us info@1180wfyl.com. Just shoot us an email if you're interested in Gary's course.
And I've got number two and three attendees. Myself and my wife will be there.
There you go.
Oh, somebody, get to meet Chuck Proctor.
Somebody up there is going to have to find a venue, you know, a place we can do this that will be available that day, that will hold 25 to 30 people maybe, and let's do it.
Well,
yeah, I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, exactly. Sam, you in on this one?
No, I think I'd be, put me down for it.
That's four.
All right, so you got four. So you've got, but you got to get four qualified people. So we need more to call in.
Yeah, we don't count as qualified. I understand, but I like that idea. I like that idea to get the folks into that, and we will certainly be developing and working. In fact, some ideas have come into my head already. So we'll keep on that one. We'll accept that challenge now. But. I want to get real quick to Sam. We were talking about the what ifs, and so Sam, my question is, based on what you know, what I was saying with Gary, and also again what you were saying about getting the message, getting the pastors. What if the Constitution didn't exist?
If the Constitution wouldn't exist, we wouldn't be sitting here. Let's start being very frank.
Right,
we would not be here. The airwaves would already have been controlled and shut off, and speaking biblically, publicly, constitutionally would not be permitted. That's a very frank one right now. And I don't think I maybe would have gotten here this morning, driving about an hour to get here without having some roadblock along the way, or
it's Pennsylvania,
or checked,
you gotta have,
you know,
that.
Yeah.
You know, so I think there's a lot of what ifs. But can I say one practical thing?
Sure.
If we're sort of listening here, you were talking about how to instruct in some of this. I instruct and encourage grandparents, because in the groups that I talk with, mm-hmm. well, most of those who are in the 50s and 60s, you are correct. It is surprising to me how many of those who are in those groups, and Gary, I might find the same thing, but how many of those will say that their own personal grown children did not pick up on the same values and are not communicating to their children. And I challenge the grandparents by saying, and they feel like many cases they don't have much to do, or they've lost their own children perhaps, and maybe they came to knowledge too late in life or whatever. And I tell them, do not even think about giving up for a moment, because your impact on your grandchildren in relating even what you remember to be, and it's amazing how many folks in their 50s and 60s were either immigrants from other countries who didn't have what we have, or know people directly, or they've traveled and they've seen it, but they are real life experiences. When they relay those kinds of things to their grandchildren, I hardly find a grandchild who doesn't like to hear stories from grandma and grandpa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when they share those things, they can light a spark and relate realities from real life experiences that stick with that child. And I find that those grandchildren then, yes, they can go back and influence their parents.
Yeah.
So we've got to think about generation. We're 50s, 60s. We have to reach the next generation. Mm-hmm. Those are the grandchildren of our ages that are coming up. And I say, grandparents that are listening, do not think for a minute, even if you've lost it with your own children, go to your grandchildren. Just tell them what it was like when you went to school and you had to walk and you experienced discipline and you saw these things that were there. Relate even some of those things. The contrast is so great. Yet it opens the door. That's one good way, practical way, I think.
Yeah, in other words, you know, real quick, is that the future is on us. Not the kids, but it's on us to educate those kids that will take over that future as well. Gary, I'll give you the last word.
Yes, and if we don't do that, then we're going to see ourselves bringing Ronald Reagan's words to fruition, where we'll be talking about a time in America when men were once free.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That's a scary thought.
That is a very scary thought. Chuck, you got a last thought.
Well, Bruce, I want to just jump back to Gary's gracious offer to come up here and conduct his first condensed 8-hour class. I think that's something that is not just a great Christmas offer, but something that we here in the studio and in the listening audience should take to heart and share it with our friends. Now, let's not have 25 people. Let's have 50. Let's have 75. Let's have 100 people there and make it a really big event. So I'm encouraging all of our listeners to call in today, send an email, contact us, contact Gary, and let's make this a big event in January and start off the new year with that program.
Mm-hmm.
Very good.
Any
great
thoughts
idea,
for next week, topics for next week for our listeners to stay tuned?
Corinne, I'm going to take your little idea there as a challenge for my next essay. What would life be like in America without the Constitution? Mm-hmm. That's what I'm going to write on.
Very good. Very good.
That's going to be a scary one to read.
Yeah, see? Hey, and you're going to be responsible for creating that one.
Thank you.
Well, this has been yet another quick hour of We the People, Constitution Matters. We were off last week. We come back, and boom, it goes by just as fast. But a lot of good discussion, a lot of good topic on that. A good challenge from Gary out there for everybody. But it is Friday, December 5th. Weekend's coming up. It's going to be a little wet around here in Pennsylvania. But the holiday season's coming up. Yes, we do say Merry Christmas here, and we say it to you right now. Merry Christmas. I'm Bruce Stocking, along with Corinne Lillis, Gary Porter, Sam Rohr, and Chuck Proctor. Have a good weekend, and do something with the family. See you next week.